From feature story news in Silicon Valley and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Simon Marks. Today, a special edition of our broadcast coming to you from the headquarters of Google in Mountain View, California. I'm here producing a Google Plus presidential hangout with Barack Obama, a virtual chat room in which the president will take questions from Americans nationwide about the issues he discussed in the State of the Union address.
It's so obviously the right thing to do. Comprehensive immigration reform has gained support from all walks of American life.
The state of the economy, the plight of minimum wage workers, the battle against inequality, and the outlook for the president's agenda during his remaining time in office. It's all ahead on today's special edition of FSN Reports after our summary of the day's main stories.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Foster. A week-long peace conference in Geneva on the Syrian crisis has ended without an agreement from both sides. In fact, they hurled insults and remain to decide whether President Bashar al-Assad will leave power. UN envoy Lakhdar Brahimi, however, said he saw signs of common ground and scheduled more talks for February 10th. Sandra Gatman has been following the talks from Brussels.
The international community has had little hope that a Geneva conference bringing both sides of the Syrian conflict to the negotiating table would help kickstart a peaceful solution to 3 years of violence between President Bashar al-Assad's regime and opposition forces. But both sides have failed to agree on the central premise of the talks, which has been to bring in a transitional government that will see President Assad step down from power. After a week of talks brokered by the international community, the two sides hurled stinging insults, with the opposition's Luai Safi saying the regime had no desire to stop bloodshed and the Syrian government calling the opposition immature.
Ukraine's President Viktor Yanukovych has signed an amnesty bill for opposition activists detained during mass protests that have rocked the country since November. The opposition had previously denounced the proposed law, and protesters say they're staying in the streets. The U.S. State Department says the Ukrainian government's offer is not enough, while Moscow is calling on official Kiev to suppress what they call an insurgency. Daria Bondarchuk reports from Moscow.
The Ukrainian president, who announced Thursday he was in a sick leave, signed a law giving amnesty to those who haven't committed grave crimes during the mass rallies that swept Ukraine in the past couple of weeks. The law also demands that the opposition should clear streets and buildings occupied by protesters during the rallies. These preconditions have been rejected by the opposition as no real compromise.
The controversial Keystone XL oil pipeline would not make a big difference to greenhouse gas emissions, according to a much-anticipated report by the U.S. State Department. The findings of the environmental impact assessment are already being used by supporters of the project to argue that the Obama administration should give the green light. Opponents say the pipeline from Canada to the U.S. would threaten the environment through which it passes and fuel climate change. Malcolm Brown reports.
The report concludes that the Keystone project would have little net effect on greenhouse gas emissions. It finds that approval or denial would be unlikely to significantly alter the rate at which Canadian oil sands are exploited or the demand for heavy crude from U.S. refineries. Industry organizations like the American Petroleum Institute say it proves their case that the project is environmentally safe. Environmental groups are angry, Friends of the Earth calling the review a farce and accusing the State Department of colluding with the Canadian government and the oil industry.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. Canada's spy network, the Communications Security Establishment Canada, gathered up millions of points of data from mobile phones and other wireless devices of travelers at a major Canadian airport. The CBC reports documents provided by fugitive whistleblower Edward Snowden indicate the agency was illegally spying on Canadians. Priscilla Huff has more.
The chief of the Communications Security Establishment Canada said recently that his agency does not target Canadians at home or abroad in their foreign intelligence activities, nor do they target anyone in Canada. And yet the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation reports a document provided by fugitive whistleblower Edward Snowden indicates that agency carried carried out an operation to collect data points from mobile phones, tablets, and other Wi-Fi-enabled devices about where travelers were going in a major Canadian airport.
U.S. law enforcement officials are investigating after suspicious white powder was mailed to at least five hotels near the site of Sunday's Super Bowl. At least one of the letters has already been tested and found to contain only cornstarch. Iris Spitzer has more from New York.
Hazardous materials teams and a bomb squad responded after envelopes containing white powder were found at three hotels near East Rutherford, New Jersey, the site of Sunday's American football Super Bowl game. One of those envelopes, sent to the Homewood Suites, was found to contain cornstarch, a non-toxic substance. In addition, investigators intercepted additional envelopes from a mail truck before it reached two other hotels in the area. Across the river in New York, authorities are also investigating a suspicious letter sent to the office of former Mayor Rudy Giuliani. New York police, however, say the letter sent to Giuliani does not contain a hazardous substance. The Super Bowl is the most-watched television event in the U.S., with over 100 million viewers annually.
And that's the latest feature story news. Rebecca Foster reporting.
From Feature Story News in Mountain View, California, I'm Simon Marks. Welcome to FSN Reports. Today, we're bringing you a special edition of the program. I've spent the week at Google's headquarters producing a Google Plus Hangout with President Barack Obama. It took place earlier today, and the president faced questions from members of the public all over the country about issues he discussed in his State of the Union address. The Hangout, a virtual chat room, was moderated by Steve Grove, Director of Community Partnerships for Google+.
Mr. President, it's become a great annual tradition for you to speak to your fellow Americans on Google+ and YouTube after your State of the Union speech. Welcome back, and thanks for joining us.
Well, it's great to see you, Steve. Thank you so much for helping to set this up.
Well, we're excited. Let's get right to it. We're actually going to start in the western part of the country today as we begin our journey across America. And Sheila Chung Hagen, who works for the Public Utilities Commission of San Francisco. Sheila, let's start with you.
Happy Lunar New Year, Mr. President.
Thank you so much.
You've called 2014 a year of action, where you'll work with Congress when it's possible, and you'll use your executive authority when Congress fails to take action. You've asked Congress to pass a comprehensive immigration reform with a clear path to citizenship. And yet, legislators continue at an impasse. You have used your executive authority in the past to help the Dreamers, young people who were brought to this country as children. And so I'm wondering, will you now use your executive authority to halt deportations, which have been ripping families apart, until Congress passes a comprehensive immigration reform?
Well, Sheila, it's great to talk to you, and thanks for the question. I think this is one area where I am modestly optimistic about Congress acting this year. And part of that optimism is that it's so obviously the right thing to do. Comprehensive immigration reform has gained support from all walks of American life. You have law enforcement, you have clergy member, including evangelicals that are traditionally strong supporters of the Republican Party. You've obviously got immigration activists and communities, but you also have businesses who recognize that this would be terrifically important for economic growth, short-term and long-term, would actually cut our deficits by $1 trillion. So the arguments are compelling. We saw a bipartisan bill pass through the Senate last year, and Speaker Boehner announced yesterday, that he has principles for immigration reform that are moving in the direction of the principles that I had laid out from the time that I first ran for this office. There are still some differences, and obviously the devil is in the details, but it is my firm belief that we can get immigration reform done this year. And I don't want to presuppose that we can't. Obviously, if at some point we see that it's not getting done, I'm going to look at all options to make sure that we have a rational, smart system of immigration. But I'm going to do everything I can in these coming months to see if we can get this over the finish line. And I think we actually can get it done. One last point I want to make, and that is that In any scenario, we're going to have stronger border security. In any scenario, we're going to improve the legal immigration system so that families can be unified faster, that you don't have this massive bureaucracy, these backlogs. In any scenario, we're going to be making sure that employers aren't taking advantage of undocumented workers and that we can enforce that. I believe in any scenario, we should also make sure that at the end of the day, people are able to become citizens, because we don't want a situation in which, you know, we've got two categories of people in this country, folks who are full-fledged citizens and folks who are not. This is something where there's going to be some differences between the Senate approach, which does have a clear path to citizenship, and what we've seen so far out of the House Republicans. I'm going to keep on fighting as hard as I can and remain, as I said, modestly optimistic. You can never be completely optimistic when you're talking about Washington because we have some history of stuff not getting done in this town as opposed to getting done. But I'm going to be pushing very hard in the next few months to see if we can get this over the finish line.
Well, let's go to Steve in Santa Clara next, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. President. First of all, I want to say it's an honor to speak with you, sir. Thank you for taking the time to do this. My question to you is, last year I filmed a documentary about Chernobyl in Ukraine, and while I was there, I made a lot of really good friends, and right now, those friends are living under what could be considered Soviet-type rules with freedoms and such, and what does the administration plan to do to assist the protesters in Kiev?
What I think the people of Ukraine do not want to see, and this is evidenced by what's happened on the streets, is a situation where behind closed doors, their aspirations for a more free society and one that's integrated with Europe more closely, that's foreclosed. And, you know, I think this is just one more example of what we've seen around the world. It's very hard for countries to engage in an old-style politics that doesn't take into account the genuine hopes and aspirations of ordinary people, because with the internet and smartphones and Google and technology and information, you know, people want to be part of determining their own destiny, and you can't bottle up information in the same way that you used to, and hopefully those in power in Ukraine are going to recognize that and we can get this resolved peacefully. I'm always worried about the violence, but as I said, we're engaging on a daily basis with the Ukrainian government to make sure that we get a positive outcome there.
Mr. President, we're going to say goodbye to our friends here in the West. Goodbye, everybody.
See you guys.
Bye, Mr. President.
It's great to talk to you. Thanks.
And we're gonna move on to the next section of our road trip today. It's in the middle of the country. And you'll see as we hop into new hangout that we're in the central part of the United States. I should tell you that here in the heartland, like most of the country, the number one most searched issue on Google is the economy, and that outpaces searches for all other issues. So we're actually really going to put a focus on the economy for this part of our conversation. And to help us do that, we are joined today by Darnell Summer, a fry cook at a fast food restaurant in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Let's start with you, Darnell.
Good afternoon, Mr. President. My name is Darnell Summers. I'm 57 years old, and I work in the fast food industry. I have been on strike four times. I'm only making $7.25 an hour. I've been on strike four times in association with Wisconsin's Jobs Now to try to get an increase in wages and a fast food union with no prevail. My question to you is, what can you and Congress do to help people as myself in this situation survive? Because with $7.25 and we were broken down to part-time to avoid paying health insurance, we can't survive. It's not living.
Well, Darnell, I agree with you. And on Tuesday at my State of the Union, I talked about this. We've got to make sure that the economy is growing and creating jobs. We've got to make sure folks have the skills to get those jobs. But we also got to make sure that work pays. And the minimum wage in this country has not gone up in a very long time. It's actually worth about 20% less than when Ronald Reagan came into office back in 1980. And yeah, I think The one thing Americans agree on is that if you work full-time in this country, you should not be in poverty when you're raising your families. So here's what I've done myself through executive action. I intend to make sure that anybody who's doing federal business, anybody who's a federal contractor, that their federally funded employees are governed by a minimum wage, $10.10 an hour. Beyond that, I'm working to encourage states, governors, mayors, state legislators to raise their own minimum wage. And since I made this call for a higher minimum wage a year ago, you've seen already five states that have increased their minimum wage. A number of cities have moved forward on a living wage initiative of the sort that you're talking about in your hometown, in your home state. So I'm going to continue to try to support those coalitions, saying it's the right thing to do. Obviously, the way to reach millions of people would be for Congress to pass a new federal minimum wage law.
Let's go to Leatrice next in Kalamazoo.
Hello, President Obama.
Hi.
Hi. I just want to give you a little background about myself. I am the third oldest of six girls raised by a single mother living in poverty. I was the first in my family to graduate from college, the first of my siblings to graduate from high school. I have a master's degree from Western Michigan University. I'm a parent of two beautiful children, and I am blind. Even though I graduated at the top of my class with a master's degree, I was out of work actively looking for employment for 3 years post-graduation before I was offered my first part-time job in the field of social work. My question to you is, what is your plan for inclusion for persons with disabilities in the workforce?
Well, Leatrice, first of all, I couldn't be prouder of you and everything that you've accomplished.
Well, thank you, sir.
You're welcome. And I know your mom must be really proud of you.
My mom is, yes.
And all your siblings and your children. It is absolutely true that folks with disabilities have a higher unemployment rate, and we've got to break down more barriers for them so that they can use all the skills and talents that they've got, that somebody like you has, and not have assumptions about what you can and cannot do, preventing you from contributing to your society and supporting your family. The good news is that more and more employers are becoming aware of this. First of all, the federal government, we have really made a big push with all of our agencies to say, what more can we do to actively recruit and employ persons with disabilities? And we have just some tremendous folks in the federal workforce who are doing top-of-the-line work every single day, and we've been steadily able to increase the numbers of persons with disabilities who are employed.
Mr. President, we head over to the East Coast for our final hangout of the day. We're really pleased to be joined by Rebecca Stewart, a proud mother of two in Covington, Kentucky. Rebecca, let's start with you.
Thanks. My question regards Obamacare, which I think probably has a general consensus right now that the rollout perhaps was premature. I'm probably not the only one who's had really a panicked experience lately trying to figure out if my 10-year-old son can continue with his specialist or not. And I know that I cannot keep my plan, which I liked. But as I'm trying to decide what to do going forward, I've spent weeks with days on the phone getting confidently delivered wrong answers, conflicting information, and it's becoming quite obvious to me that a lot of agencies, almost everyone I've talked to, is having a lot of trouble figuring out the new rules. Question for you is, what are you doing to fix this or simplify what seems to be such a complicated process?
What I'll do first right away is make sure that somebody out of here, this White House, calls you directly, and I promise you, not only will they be confident, but it'll be the right answer.
Thank you, I need that.
But more generally, what we've been able to do, and you don't have to pussyfoot around, the rollout was a problem because the website wasn't working properly. What we have done is, first of all, the website's working, healthcare.gov. The first place for folks to look to see whether they qualify for a tax credit, whether they can get cheaper insurance through these exchanges is to go to healthcare.gov, where you do not have to wait anymore. And generally speaking, for the majority of people, certainly if you don't have health insurance, this will be a good deal for you. If you already have health insurance, for the majority of folks like you who do, Rebecca, typically your prices will be lower or comparable, and you will have better health insurance because the insurance companies won't be able to drop you when you need it most. There aren't going to be lifetime limits so that suddenly you find yourself with a huge bill at the end. And you may qualify for tax credits. If, though, after you look at that, it appears that you still are going to have a tough time, or if you have a particular specialist and you haven't found that specialist in the network of the exchange that's offered in Kentucky, then we are looking at rules to make sure that somebody who's actively being treated, for example, can remain with their specialist for the duration of their treatment. And that's what I'll try to provide more information about. For people who are generally watching, who have very specific questions like this, Rebecca, we have set up helplines. And what I would suggest is that everybody who's listening, if you have a particular question around this that is not answerable over the internet through healthcare.gov, call up one of the call centers. And in the case of the state of Kentucky, they've got a pretty good operation there. Call up them and find out what exactly your problem is, and hopefully you'll get a good answer. But you, Rebecca, since you're talking to the president directly, will get, I guarantee you, a firm answer by the end of the day.
We're going to go to Reham over in Washington, D.C., just given how much time we have left. Thanks, Rebecca. Reham, let's hear from you.
President Obama, surveillance is an issue that's really important for me, and I'm really glad that you mentioned it in your State of the Union address. In the speech that you gave a couple weeks ago, you stated that you are making certain reforms to NSA programs to ensure our privacy and our civil liberties. From the NYPD spying on Muslim communities to revelations of the NSA surveillance program, a culture of distrust and suspicion has developed among Americans towards government and law enforcement. So what are you doing to regain the trust of the American people?
Well, Reham, even before the State of the Union, I gave a pretty comprehensive speech about the NSA. I'm pretty sure it can be found on Google, so pull it up, because I won't be able to go into all the details here that I did in that speech. But here's what it comes down to. First of all, the NSA and our entire intelligence community, by law, is prohibited from engaging in surveillance of U.S. persons or people in the United States, even if they're non-citizens, without a court order. That's always been true. That continues to be true. The second thing that people really got concerned about was the collection of all these telephone calls that are made into one single database that the United States government was holding. It was only being accessed when you had evidence of reasonable suspicion that you had a phone number associated with a terrorist network and you wanted to find out who else was being called. And generally, that doesn't affect the overwhelming majority of the American people. But folks, I think, legitimately raised a concern. If all those numbers and all those phone calls are being held in one place, isn't that potentially subject to abuse down the road? And I announced that we would reform that program so that the U.S. government wasn't holding this data while still being able to chase down leads when we have a potential terrorist attack. In the next 60 days, we are going to get a report back from the NSA and the FBI about how we do that. In the meantime, that database will not be able to be queried without a judicial approval, just like any other warrant. More broadly, though, we also have surveillance outside this country. And what I've done in an unprecedented way is say, we've got to protect the privacy rights, not just to people here in the United States, but everywhere. And if you're an ordinary person, wherever you live, you should have some assurance that all your information is not somehow being gathered and sifted through. We've set up rules to do that. But trying to find this right balance is difficult.
Thanks, Reham. We have time for a quick final question from Rob in Portland. Rob?
Hello, Mr. President. This is about the coolest thing ever. From one man to another, from a father to another, an American to another, just like you are, how are you? How is life treating you? How, you know, are you happy? And, you know, is
That's
this
a great question,
is everything
Rob?
Good with you? Is everything good with you, man?
You know, I am pretty happy, I got to tell you. And the main reason is because I've got this amazing wife and two unbelievably terrific daughters who are growing up a little too fast, and I don't see them as much as I like because they're always hanging out with their friends these days. You know, that keeps my life in perspective. You know, a great family, we're healthy. Obviously, you know, I can support that family, and they're doing fine. And that's where I start, and that's my baseline. And I have dinner with them every night at 6:30 during the week, and I catch up with them. And for all the challenges I'm dealing with, that's always home base. But the other reason I'm pretty good is that this is an extraordinary privilege, this job. It is really hard, and it's long hours, and there are a lot of things flying at you all the time. But every single day, I wake up and I have the possibility, the opportunity, of making things a little bit better for somebody out there.
You know, maybe all appreciate
it's,
that.
You know, maybe making sure somebody has health care who didn't have it before. Maybe it's making sure that you know, a small business gets a loan. Maybe it's, you know, helping to get a school instituted, an early education program, so the kids are getting a better start. And, you know, there's a big government. It's an ocean liner, so sometimes the changes you want don't happen as fast as you'd like. You know, sometimes the government will screw up, and since the buck stops with me, you know, I have to look there and say, well, how do we screw that thing up? And we got to go in and fix it, and that can be frustrating when you got effectively 2 million people who are working for you. At any given time, somebody may be screwing up out of a couple million folks. But every single day, though, you just realize it's pretty lucky to be able to serve the American people this way. And when I travel outside of Washington, or when I have a chance to have a chat like this, I'm just reminded of how many wonderful people there are in this country. And as I said, the State of the Union, the economy is improving. Things are getting better. We are well positioned, better positioned than any country on earth, to make this 21st century an American century. For me to be a part of that, that's a pretty good deal. And my wife, at least, still thinks I'm pretty cute, even with the gray hair. I just want you to know.
And you're looking great, man. You definitely are.
You. All right, man.
Thanks very much, man.
Thank you, Rob.
I think that's all the time we have today, Mr. President. Thanks a lot for joining us on behalf of all of us here at Google and YouTube, and of course, everybody who joined us today. This has been a lot of fun. We'd love to do it again with you real soon. Take care.
Steve, I had a great time. Thank you, everybody.
President Barack Obama in today's Google Plus presidential hangout moderated by Steve Grove. The president was at the White House taking questions from Americans all over the country. And that's the Friday edition of FSN Reports. You can email us at reports@featurestory.com. And you can interact with us on Twitter. Follow us there at Feature Story. On Monday, back to our more regular look at the day's major national and international news stories. For now, I'm Simon Marks at the headquarters of Google in Mountain View, California. For everyone with FSN everywhere, have a great weekend. Goodbye.